Thank you for joining us for this update call with Greg Romont, President and CEO of Centurion Asset Management. My name is Paul Mayer, Head of Sales, and I will serve as moderator for this call, which will follow a question and answer format based on questions and topics submitted by you, our investment advisor partners. Given the large number of participants, all callers have been placed on listen only. This call should last roughly between 30 and 45 minutes and will also be recorded and available on our website this coming Tuesday. Greg will primarily discuss the impact of COVID-19 on all three Centurion funds, with a focus on Centurion's largest fund, the Centurion Apartment REIT, which now stands at over $2.7 billion assets under administration, with an annualized return since 2009 inception of over 13% positive year to date. Greg, thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Paul, and thank you everyone for attending. I hope that you and your families are keeping safe and healthy at this time. I wanted to start this meeting with an appeal. In the past week, we have launched our own Centurion COVID-19 Community Relief Drive to help raise funds for the communities we operate in, particularly hospitals and health workers, the Red Cross, and food banks across Canada. We've set a target of $200,000 and have seeded the drive with $100,000 from ourselves. We've sent an email to raise awareness about the drive, and it's also posted on our website at centurion.ca. Any contribution you could make would be greatly appreciated.
Well, that's wonderful, Greg. Thank you so much for setting that up. And I guess to begin then, as we all know, Centurion's core businesses are the operation of apartments and student housing, as well as in providing construction financing, primarily in the purpose-built apartment space. The current crisis is affecting everyone, albeit in different ways. Greg, what are the primary ways in which the crisis is affecting Centurion, and how are you dealing with it?
Operationally, we're working from home. So business is moving at a normal pace, just differently. We moved early to prepare, and so we were ready, and we moved to work from home on the 16th of March. As housing providers, we're considered an essential service, so we are open and we will continue to be open. We've had to modify our operations to limit site staff interactions with the public, and this means more is done online or via the phone. We're cleaning the buildings more often and more intensely than before, and rentals are being done virtually now. We've been using our online and virtual rental tools for a long time, long before COVID-19, so our rental operations have adapted quite well to the new environment.
And so what operational challenges do you have then with the assets and the firm, and how are you addressing them?
Well, I think many residents have concerns about rent due to job loss or other income interruptions. I think the governments across Canada, for the most part, have stopped evictions, and that's in part because the courts are closed anyway, so enforcement would be a challenge. Fortunately, they've stepped in with significant income supports, and there's active discussion of a national rent supplement to help affected residents. Whether we need it or not is another story, because the income supports are so far are quite generous. We're communicating with residents to get them the info they need on how to access government financial supports, and we've also decided to defer any rent increases that might have otherwise received notice on till the crisis is passed. Quite frankly, it's the right thing to do, as you know, we're all in this together, and I don't think that we or any other business wants to be seen as trying to price gouge or profiteer off a national crisis. We know our frontline staff are going to be working harder than ever and putting themselves into the community to serve our residents. So we've awarded bonus pay to all of our community-facing staff to reflect our appreciation for the increased workload. There's no doubt there's more work for them, and also for their commitment to their communities.
Thanks, Greg. Now, no question about it. The overwhelming question that was submitted to us prior to the call was the following, you know, sort of in a summary basis. Do you foresee a substantial impairment to operations and, more importantly, a potential drop in NAV? And is the reduction or temporary elimination of distributions something you're considering?
Well, we don't see at this point a material impairment to our operations. We were ready for work from home in advance, and our staff report they're largely operating as normal for our head office and management staff, although everyone's feeling a little bit isolated and probably, you know, the social aspect of work is a little bit more challenging to deal with, but otherwise we're operationally the same. On NAV, I don't have a firm view that we'll see a drop, but if there was one, I expect it to be temporary. You know, we still have a massive shortage of housing in Canada, particularly rental housing in the country, and that's not going away. In fact, what happened in the U.S. post the global financial crisis is rental demand spiked as consumers became afraid of taking on debt or were unable to access credit. Rents spiked up as a result, and vacancies declined. It's also been my long-term view that interest rates were heading to zero, and anyone who knows me and is listening to me talk at any time in the last 8 years has known that view, and that negative rates are on the way, or at least zero. It took me years to be right on that, and the reason for getting there wasn't what I expected, but here we are. In the long run, rents will likely be higher and capitalization rates lower because the cost of funds will just continue to decline. Distribution eliminations are not something that are currently being considered, or even suspensions. The REIT is highly liquid, so there's no reason that I see at the moment that suggests we should be implementing a distributions reduction or even a temporary elimination or reduction.
Well, that's fantastic. Thanks, Greg. Now, even though the financial stimulus being provided to Canadians is primarily directed at allowing ordinary Canadians, you know, to buy food and pay their rent, there's going to be those who simply, after that, don't still have enough to pay their full rent while out of work. How do you intend to deal with this in real time? Does it provide economic, in fact, opportunities maybe for Centurion in the long run as well?
So that's a good question. As of right now, about 90% of residents have already paid their rent, and those that remain, we believe, are waiting for funds to flow either on unemployment insurance or the CERB, so the Canadian Emergency Relief Benefit application. CERB applications only started on Monday of this week, so we believe this will help bridge most residents. To give you some perspective, you know, in a normal month, we'd be a little bit ahead of 90%, probably 95%. There's always people that we're chasing, you know, throughout the course of the month to get to full collection. So this is actually a very good result, and we're really pleased with it. We, like most large landlords in the country, have made the decision to halt any rent increases, starting with those that took effect on April 1st. Like I said, I think it's the right thing to do, and most of the large landlords in the country have decided to get on board with that industry initiative. We're communicating with residents to point them to government relief resources that they have access to, although I think the media has done a pretty good job of pointing people to those resources, and there's been record applications for those. There is talk, like you said, of a national rent supplement program. I know a number of you know, our industry associations and the apartment side have been working with governments on talking about that. There's a good chance that this happens, and it certainly helps. I'm not convinced that it's necessarily a requirement, given that the income supports have been put in place. We have prepared that for residents that are unable to pay all of their rent, to pay what they can, and then we can work on a written payment plan. So this is the mechanism that has been in place in Ontario for years, that where tenants that want to stay but have had some kind of disruption can stay and do a payment plan that gets them back on track. That's the model that's been in use in Ontario for years. It's the model we plan on using. If necessary, where proof of hardship can be proven. And we believe that once the courts reopen, that that's the model that even if they were open, this is what we would have been doing anyway. So it's not a substantial change and probably how most of these files would have gone anyway. And we know that just a month ago in some markets like Ontario, we were paying residents with undermarket rents $5,000 to $8,000 to leave. Our market rent gap in Ontario is 25% to 30% between what market rents are and what in-place rents are. And I believe that some residents will try and game this system. We don't know how many, but it doesn't appear to be that many. But those that do will likely be evicted eventually when the system starts moving again. But it's not really a smart thing for them to do, and that's why we don't think many are going to try. With market vacancy rates in the tightest markets in Canada, like BC and Ontario, at 1%, which really means effectively zero when you adjust for the units that are off market to renovate, means that after adjusting for that, if they were to be evicted, they may not find new housing at all, let alone at a price that they can afford. So this is like playing chicken with a Mack truck on a single lane highway. At this point, we see very few residents that we believe are trying to game the system, and that those that haven't paid are really just waiting for the cash flow benefits to flow and intend to pay all or what they can and then arrange a payment plan for the balance. We do believe that there's going to be opportunities in this. Prior to COVID issues crept up, we were busier than ever, mostly focused on newly built apartment product. We saw this trend coming 7 years ago, new apartment, and we got ahead of it. And builders are now building product at a rapid clip to meet the housing needs, driven in large part by immigration and also trends in millennial preferences and seniors' preferences. We anticipate that there will be some developers that are over-leveraged and will become more flexible in pricing to get quick sales. And certainly that until recently, they may have taken a more relaxed approach to sales or refinancing. As a result, only the best capitalized players will be ready for the opportunity when the time is right. And while we're very liquid, we know that we'll need a war chest to be able to capitalize on acquisition opportunities, which will give us a huge advantage. So we plan to be ready, whether that's 2 months or 4 months. I don't think I have a crystal ball. It's better than anyone else's, other than to know that opportunities are going to come and we just want to be ready for them.
And I guess that's obviously why we're open for this month as well. So thanks, Greg, for that. Another particular topic that had overwhelming interest was in relation to student housing. Students have basically gone home for the remainder of the year, and it's still, I would say, unknown whether normal activities will resume in September. Care to comment, Greg?
Sure, absolutely. So in most of our properties, the students have mostly, but not all, gone home. Domestic students have mostly gone home. Almost all of our leases are on a May to May cycle, so they move in May 1, they move out April 30th. Or they move in September, and we have last month's rents for everyone. So the April rents were already taken care of because that would have been their last month's rent. Most students rent for 12 months and an occupy is for 8, as that's the market standard, right? Because it's very difficult for them to find a place that will rent to them for 8 months. You can look at it as they might be in occupancy for 8 months, but they've got a 12-month payment plan for 8 months of occupancy. I don't think we're materially different summer occupancy. It might actually be higher this year. Most summers we have physical occupancy about 25%. It's hard for us to say what it will be over the summer. It doesn't matter too much, but we have noted a number of international students who would have gone back home normally during the summer have decided to stay, because either from transportation disruptions or maybe the situation in in their home countries is worse or than it is here. So there's certainly a desire for them to, you know, stay in place. We've, but you know, September is almost 6 months away. Most of our leasing was done for May and September already, so we're mostly already leased. We believe that students will be back in school by September, if for no other reason than an economic slowdown of 6 months has no precedent in history. So I just don't know how governments can do that. In fact, I was reading an interesting email, news article just yesterday that talked about an increase in demand for student housing as you know the unemployment. Rate for students today is probably going to be worse or graduates than any time in recent memory. So there's certainly incentives to go back and continue schooling at a time of slowing economic growth. Further, most student leases have parental guarantees, and since we service mostly higher-end universities and not colleges, our experience is the credit profiles of most university student families exceed that of the regular rental population. And while students have little experience in managing their lives and responsibilities to due to helicopter parenting, in other words, the parents do everything for them, and are often late, our view is that collections, while slower, are generally reliable. The exception would be with international students who, if they leave the country, may have more trouble collecting from. But it appears, as I mentioned before, we have more international students that are decided to stay in their residence rather than return home due to logistical or other issues with returning home.
Thanks so much, Greg. That was very interesting on the student resident side. I would like just to remind everybody just to make sure that if they're not already on mute, which they should be, if they could please ensure that they are on mute, star two, please. Thanks so much. Just turning to our loan books, both the REO and CFIT, could you describe to us, Greg, what you're hearing from borrowers and how Centurion is dealing with outstanding loans?
Sure. We're in touch with all of our borrowers. On the lending book, we've really shifted entirely to monitoring and assistance mode. You know, construction is still moving, but at a slower pace, right? Construction has been deemed an essential service in Ontario and a number of other provinces. I believe project delays are inevitable, but at this stage, that it will not be major. We've only had two missed payments for April. And we're working with borrowers on solution for those or pursue enforcement. At this point, we certainly don't see any resulting in any losses. With CFIT, we took down a write-down on a loan that was being restructured in the courts in the U.S. It's completely unrelated to COVID-19, although the timing was rather unfortunate. On other CFIT loans, some of our warrant positions written down as the market moved, the equity markets moved down, but that's already reflected in NAV. We believe with significant stock market pullbacks, and we're in the process of resetting some of those warrants, which we think will give us a very favorable entry point that could set us up for some nice gains in the future. You know, our strategy has always been to have the majority of the book structured as debt, but also have certain portion where possible to get equity upsides or equity kickers or warrants. And we think from the starting points that we're getting today, we're getting some very good entry points. So we feel pretty good about, you know, the future on that book.
Oh, great. So, Greg, now taking a bit of a macro view, you know, you have many years experience in the capital markets. I believe you went into the capital markets as early as 1993, if I'm not mistaken. And you're a student
91.
Of both. 91. Oh, my gosh. 91. And you're a student of both fiscal and monetary policy. Apart from how that it pertains to Centurion, what are your thoughts regarding how central banks can deal with the unfolding situation and how governments can deal with this from a fiscal perspective?
Well, so far the response from governments has been unprecedented, and I think that's a really good thing. They're doing things today which wouldn't have even been considered possible a month ago. So we need to think of this as a war, but, you know, this too shall pass. The governments are doing the right thing and putting liquidity into the system on a monetary policy basis and taking policy rates lower. You know, fiscal policy is also responding. I think the Bank of Canada, and I've said this before, I thought they were dramatically behind the curve. I think they're still behind the curve. Rates are going lower, and I believe eventually negative. The fiscal response is probably going to get bigger. In the long run, though, the debt overhang from all of this means that higher taxes for all of us and lower growth, which means that rates are going to get locked down here for a long time, and we're going to be closer to Japan. The Japan scenario is kind of what I've talked about for, you know, 7 to 8 years, and I think that we've set ourselves up for that situation. Fortunately, Canada has, you know, debt GDP ratio, which is very low in the 30s, whereas you look at Japan, it's almost 10 times higher as a percentage of debt to GDP. Even the United States is in the 90s. So there's lots of room, you know, historically compared to countries like Japan, for them to rack up debt to dig our way out of this. But again, that probably means that we're in a period of low rates for much longer than anyone was thinking conceivable. And, you know, again, as I repeat, COVID-19 wasn't on my forecast, but this scenario of low rates for longer has certainly been on my view screen for a long time. I think,
Greg, last question. From the point of view of an investor, what are your thoughts about how investors ought to be thinking about their investment portfolios? Of course, keeping in mind investment horizons are for many years.
Well, look, you know, I think the first thing is you want to have battle-hardened managers with long experience navigating choppy environments. I mean, quite frankly, no one has alive either in government or capital markets has been through a global pandemic before and managed through that crisis. But there's plenty of asset managers out there who've managed through periods of stress and are able to, I think, run their organizations and their funds adequately. So I think you want to be with those kinds. I think you want to focus on well-capitalized company. Liquidity is the name of the game in real estate and most industries, frankly, in weathering storms. You know, but also having capital where there are discounts to be had. You know, I think that's going to be important. You know, I like a balance of surplus liquidity and cash that aren't forced by your own cash flow or liquidity needs to sell things when things are volatile. I don't like excess leverage, and we're very lowly leveraged organizationally, about 28% in the REIT, and the other funds are sitting around zero. So, you know, I don't like excess leverage in a volatile time. It can increase your fear factor, and that makes you being vulnerable, being forced to trade when you shouldn't, either directly because you have a creditor on your back or from your own fear, and fear is the worst thing to have in any kind of market volatility. So if you borrow, you need to do it long term so you don't get squeezed. And, you know, we've got a very long term debt portfolio, like a debt liability portfolio, around 6.5 years. We basically settled everything but one debt maturity for this year, which is fairly small. So and that's a government guaranteed lease. So we should have no problem getting that rolled over either. And then we're done for the whole year. And it's only March. I think you want some physical precious metals, not funds, as a core, not trading positions. And you know, I as anyone who knows me also knows that I like real assets. So, you know, and that means not only things like real estate, but precious metals as well, unleveraged. We're entering a period where rates to be near zero for a very long time, and demand for cash flow assets will continue to rise in the long term. The economic damage caused will take time to overcome, and the low growth overhang may be long lasting. So you should look at investments that will prosper in those environments. As I said, I like real assets in this environment today because the real cost of debt capital adjusted for inflation and tax is negative. I mean, today we're able to arrange 10-year mortgages at below 2%. I think today would be about 1.8% for 10-year money. Adjust for half of that is deductible and then 2% inflation, and it's negative real cost of funds. I believe outright deflation won't happen because money can be printed to stop it from becoming endemic. So the risk, and so that's the risk, and gold is starting to show the potential risk from inflation, that rates could head higher if inflation does become a problem. But that may become a long-term problem, but it isn't one today. I think that that points to being in real assets to protect from inflation in the long term. I do believe apartments will show themselves to be one of the most resilient investments in this period of uncertainty, because we're basically right at the base for core needs, along with food, medicinal drugs and housing. And, so I think we're pretty well placed going into this environment. Although there's no one that gets away from some bumps and bruises, I think we position ourselves pretty well to secure capital and reasonable returns looking forward.
Greg, we kept it under half an hour, so I think everybody listening would appreciate that. And thank you so much for the wealth of information that you've conveyed to us all today. Well, everyone, that brings us to the end of our call. I trust that it was informative for everyone. Thank you, Greg, again for your insights, and to everybody who are on the call. On behalf of Greg, your wholesaling teams, and the entire staff at Centurion, I would like to thank you, our investment advisor partners, for your continued support, especially during these very trying times. Your wholesaling team stand ready to provide any support they can, so please do not hesitate to reach out to them at any time. May you all remain and continue to remain safe and healthy. All the best. Have a good day.